Ils sont des fonds, ils ont. Tu sais, c'est un train de maison. Non. Sorry, that's not. I wrote on the phone. I wrote on the phone, say so. Make it easier. Okay. It hasn't got a title yet, but I'm still working on it, but here it is. Cold, flying darkness wraps around my heart. Icy tentacles of dread creeping through my veins, threatens to tear me apart. Lanes of lead, so very hard to move, feeling I'm wading through tick, tick, tar, whilst emotional thoughts run within my head. Heart pounds like a fresh little bird trying to break free. Oh, lonesome fear and sorrow, leave me be. The tears that trail upon fever cheeks tell of many tales of woe, but I try never to let anyone know. But here's a gem of hope to lift my heavy sorrow. This feeling don't last too long, for as sure as the sun rises in the sky, I'll be happy, smiling, me again tomorrow.
Again.
Thank you.
That is Lisa. And next we have Peter McGinnity.
I came down here about a year ago from the north and went to visit some friends in Tramagility, and they brought me out to Inchidani Beach, and I'm in love with the place since. This is called Tide. In and out again, in and out again, relentless, restless, motion, movement, moon moved. Do you ever get tired? Brown cover, frown cover, no time to stand, frothing at the mouth. With effortless effort, you come in, a fresh coat of blue-green azure paint twice a day. You go out, with the sun splashing gold and silver diamonds here and there. White bead on blue brush. Who is the master artist with these brush strokes rare? Why in such a rush do you dare spare more time with us before you disappear? But you swept your floor, salt washed and rinsed, for walkers and readers, surfers and surface feeders, on the beautiful brown playground, and made salt seasoned pizzas with encrusted crustaceans on the claret red wetted sand. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter, and I hope you come again. Charles Parker.
There is a Parker somewhere in the room, I think it's with me. I have here a poem which was revised. Described as revised on the 14th of the 2nd, 92. I still haven't got it right. And also, it is not particularly cheerful. An outline of Japanese history. When their new liner took the plunge from the slipway, the dignitaries were left with flowers in the place of rivets and sheet metal. With flowers and inventive spirit, they have traveled far, who lived in dugouts. From Manchuria, 1930s, they pushed on towards the Great Wall of China and its gaps, past bandits and phantom armies, encountered cavalry, rare footage, and warlords, and achieved at last the conquest of Interpol, but made enemies of Chang and Mao and Franklin and King George. They travelled far, who lived in dugouts. The bright pagoda towered overhanging the mushroom of the desert, whose demon interdicting vision seared the eyes of those who dared to look, and there were some. They have travelled far, who lived in dugouts.
Thank you, Charles Parker. Sorry about that. And next we have Linda Atkinson.
I'm just having my photograph taken. I take photographs of everybody else. And not many of me. This one's been published in India and performed in France twice. It's a Celtic legacy. It's the first part of a triptych. It's not a Celtic legacy. Rising from Celtic mists, calloused, white-boned fingers on goatskin, unravel lyrical etchings on ancient stone, that weeps beneath wounds swathed in redolent moss and pink-veined thrift. Stone that cleaves to breath from Ilian pipes, shaped to spear the horizon of Atlantic blue, carrageen and crab. Flint and turf furrow skellig spines that once housed the faithful and guillemots. Ribs of currors kneel before Ulysses and crosses scoured by silent storms as ancestral skin stretched to beckon retreating tides. Anchored between the sacred and calloused white-boned fingers, the Book of Kells lay bleeding.
Thank you, Linda. And next we have Angus Daly, and I think you should switch on your Irish brains.
Hey. Thanks. I was down in Dunqueen with it there last week, so I wrote this. And it's about a walk. We went up a hill and stuff that happened. So I'll just go. O Dunqueen gudian multin hugamur fui, sus sus an bohareen. Faker shin, sieve skinon, e kershis fui, our drori. Danny Mac and tea, and tea. Corgernock school ashdor linov. Ne blint the biogo hin, breedy lin, breed ne cor tea. Rightling drap a biog osna osna malkan knick, crook vorting. Anam dave, rark umlock, o kun gu knick. Lehenish evrock, gu kyan shibail, and farmar of gudian lascade. Is inish vikilon a castona le terry keen ur, cogger no haber fack le enya. Sheasling, kyol ne main, gwailing, kind is kudakten, and fret chuv ish boshed up byug, shivon imun kyol, laurus la haron. Podi omrasta is garodin, is fionbar omweo, a kershius arna porkan ekeda. Is Ruri on Bratton Bjog, Nartamur Gwelen, Igavol Lesh. Haran Gata, Donalig Lake, Shoyan Tli, Toshib Dota Armu. Vulmer Balya, Arkyan Skriba, Balya Fierce and Erterig, Sunasos the Laudas Kata, Skinon Boon, Green Grafna Lesh, Fis Intana Iskudaptan, Ikurlesh. Shine.
Thank you. I enjoyed the musicality of that without understanding a single word. Thank you. And next we have Patricia Walsh.
This morning before I started, is anybody here who went to college in Dublin?
Yeah.
Well, it's the personality, shall I say. There's a guy who was doing his master's in history, and he was taking about forever to do it, and he was a bit of a personality, as I said. He's known as Postgrad Pat, and he's having love with all the students and all the academics. This is so important to us. But and in college results aside, there are those who had no point in talent archaeology and those who had least points trying. So it wasn't one day, something did happen in the arrival of Hugh O'Connell, a self-confessed academic archaeologist, if not the once and future High King of Ireland. He's very short, possibly no more than 5'5", and was pretty anorexic, wearing an ill-fitting suit and navy lavender tie. The only way in which he was prepared for task in hand was that he was wearing Wellingtons, and no suit, steel-toe cups either. He totally narrowed his studies to those who knew him in college and made leave of Irish history, to the point he had to take up to 10 years to do his degree. They wouldn't show us what he was actually studying, if at all, but he meant to anybody who asked him that his work was to do with the Gaelic revival of Anglo-Norman Ireland. In any case, he certainly enjoyed the aura of professional student, hobnobbing with postgraduates and academics alike. He's wont to say that he was born in the wrong century, for he knew long ago that in that era he would have had his own house and have servants and dignitaries like Sir Mam Bindany day in, day out, and Ballybastere seemed a good place to start. Anyway, when O'Connell arrived, as far as anybody was concerned, came straight out of left field and nobody knew what to do with him. He's not offered a job and seemed he would try his luck with his friend, old friend Goebbels. We'd have tried our hands at trying him on site. Who are you? I'm Hugh O'Connell, academic archaeologist. I want to see Declan Goebbels, please. He's in a meeting, but I'll call the office and tell him you're out. Here. Go to Side Corner and see you with Sheila there, and I'll try and find him. She disappeared from the cabin at her phone. When she returned, she found Stills standing outside. Look, she said, I can't reach him right now, just a voicemail. Just go over to Sheila and she'll tell you what to do. Thanks, love, but I really need to see him in person. He's that urgent. That's between him and me. He went to the office cabinet in Kedder, increasingly frustrated Wheeler, and sat down, staring intently at the window. Wheeler went to the cabin with him. Are you going outside or not? I said away, he said. Does he know you're here? Not exactly, but I still wait. Wheeler threw up her hands in frustration. What do you mean, not exactly? What do you mean, academic archaeologist? Look, I'll ring again and tell you you're here, but you have to go outside and do a bit of work. She died with such a fury, I wonder if she got the number right. Declan? What? I have a new worker here. His name is Hugh O'Connell. He wants to see before he goes on site. What did you tell him? That you were in a meeting and you won't be out later on? What's his business? He says he's an academic archaeologist. Wheeler heard her face sicker. Oh, that's Hugh O'Connell, all right. Where's Hugh, eh? He wants a job at least, he says. Is that right? I know him. I went to college with him. He's still doing his degree. God, was he 10 years by now, eh?
Thanks, Trish. And next we have Mary O'Connell.
Thanks, Sue. I just want to say how much I enjoyed our guest, Donal. It was just so enthusiastic and wonderful, and the energy, and it was a performance. So thanks a lot. This is about trying to be inspired at 4 o'clock in the morning and using the imagery of bees. So it's called Be Mused. A buzzing all night long, a swarm of electric bees will not let me sleep. They probe for pollen in my swallowed pain, crackle in the cranium, swirl in a spiral rush, transmitting frenzied signals, a code for their release. How can I end their drone, sink into velvet sleep, scoop up an amber dream? I tumble out of bed, curse while trying to move them where they can go to work. I find some unused sheets to make the transfer. Watch them tumble out. I hope the honeycomb curls thick, takes sweetness in the dark. Tonight the sting, tomorrow the reward. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. And next we have Gerard O'Brien.
This poem is about the River Lee. I counted 20, but there may have been more, shopping trolleys rusting on the river floor, twisted and useless, entangled in slime, stuck in the spot for a very long time. But when crossing the bridge by the river's fork, the sun smiled down broadly on the port of Cork. There was neither a ripple nor a puff. The sky was clear and high enough to let the lee become a perfect mirror in the sun. The Clarion rose to twice its height, majestic double gleaming bright. Slow clouds drifted across the slow sky. One photo upriver, one photo down, I captured this moment of stillness and time. This was the stillness I wanted to find, where you're only aware of what's not on your mind. Like the river reflecting, it's only skin deep, unhindered by trolleys that rust underneath.
Thank you, Deirdre. And next, Meg's greeting.
Can I call the next person now, since you've got time?
Yeah. Okay, so I'll call Hathnel Becker. Oh, you have it, okay.
Great, apologies.
I think I'm pretty well known, pretty scattered. I wasn't going to read this, but after your beautiful piece about your mother and her words came out, I thought I could sneak this very corny piece in. And it's just about Billy Randall the Great said one night, I'm going to read this new piece out to see how it goes down. And I just said, Christ, if he has to read things. And I said, what chance have I? But all I could think of was like a control tower with his little flight path and he was going to aim at the direction and the physics of sound, and that what's in your mind is only half of really reading it, and the other half is completed by that kind of interference that is group energy, where you find out it could be really an embarrassing piece to read anyway. So look at air currents. Outwards they float to find their own level, thoughts blowing out in the wind. When spoken verboten, words can be broken, finding other dimensions when free. And private convictions can remain inside you, but sharing is a snare that can trap you. Diffuse its rules, aborting a ruse. Yet sometimes a reading ignites you. A sounding through is a greeting for a few, with a longitudinal wave. Resonating, stimulating other reminiscences too. It's bouncing around in their cave. Interference can be a clash or a symmetric sine graph in a row of horizontal beads of sweating. Don't clash with a dash of rhyming volcanic ash, but can erode acoustic vetting. So two integrated rhythms combine and align in true synchronicity, and true harmony requires a thought completion allowed. It generates its own electricity. Exchange with another allows feedback reverb, and it settles the truth of your premise. Nothing works better than sending a spoken letter. A listener completes your treatise. So, a Turin long ago, my brothers had to go, visiting Grandad White. And when they became lonely, he would say, if you're homesick, no need to fear tonight. Write a letter today, wait for a windy day, to blow it up away and home all the way. That was their letter, would get its way home. So reading can find a way home for words, rooted en route to their coordinates. On flight corridors, each path for each word, there's a frequency in the rate in which they oscillate. Floating words only sink when they're heard, and you're so uplifting for me. So stay tonight and listen to the beat in your eardrums. Here's my paper plane of words for you, boo, from me.
Glad you sneak it in. And next we have somebody who's reading here, I think, for the first time, Hassan Becker.
This is a poem about the conquest of Baghdad by Hulagu, who's the son of Genghis Khan. Thanks. It's called Smoke and Words. I wish to converse with you, O lovely foes who are made of worship and gold, perched on your thrones of the gods' skulls and scepter of bone, a dagger used to weave your armor of dense emotions in glamour. Your mind is your weapon, thicker than the warhammer, but the nickname sticks, the thought smasher. And the river that is blue with ink, slow the librarians sing, is the river that will sink the grandest of ships. And as the smoke seeps through the city, the tyrant engulfed in smoke inhales words of pity. as the immortality of such scribes and writers is an envy to all allies and enemies. So I wish to converse with you. O saddest of foes who art, O saddest of foes who art made of fear and bone, lost in your head of stone, can you speak and can you do as you are told? Thank you.
Thank you, Hassan. I hope you come again. Thank you. Next we have Jim Cricker.
Okay, so this one's called Cassio Wonder, Love the Common Denominator. Stern-faced tutor instructs that zero never divides, and shows glassy-eyed pupils the errors of mind and calculator design. Our answer on screen shown, error unknown. Mathematicians tried to understand zero's divide, but centuries rolled by, and heads scratched raw, never answering this doll. It does not happen. The words of impossibility like a snare in the empty air between the crevices of one boy's ear as he sat with his ear facing tutor's face austere. A drone language of arithmetic lulls in clouds like grey clouds that enshroud the glimmering wonder of one boy's universe where somehow zero will divide. It whispers to him like obsession. It fills his imagination, an intricate procession of determination and Casio pressing. Button after boring button. Zero into one NA. Zero into two NA. He pressed it for days, weeks, months, and years, till one day it did not say NA. Worded on the Casio's green screen were numerals unusual. 3 upturned V, 07. Question marks arose in his mind's eye. They hovered like question marks, following Y. He pondered, what is this? Arithmetic magic? Centuries of head-scratched raw are now come to a halt. 3 upturned V07, 3 upturned V07, 3 upturned V07. 7 billion divided by 0 is 3 upturned V07. What must this mean? He peered at it closely for days, weeks, months, and years, till one day he flung it, frustrated and jaded after so much time wasted. And then he saw something different about the tiresome 3 upturned V07. A new way of seeing was just 180 degrees of being. It was all turned around. The Casio was upside down. 3 upturned V07 was now spelling love. Nirvana like lightning strike. New insight to the emptiness of love. An eloquent procession of words rolled out from his mouth to the people he declared the Casio's answer of zero's indivisibility. Humility awash over him, the cruxes of attachment melted and bent. Truth streamed o'er his person and history, like a dusty cosmic chest unhinged, light and clarity benevolent, sang from trees the certainty searched for centuries. Love is zero and its divisibility runs through humanity for eternity. 7 billion into emptiness, diving into red as it divides itself between living and dead. The balance is endlessly finite, a come and go of life and death, and what is the balance? But a spiraling ascension of numerical paradox twixt life and death, and yet love does not recess, love does not grow, forever turning vermilion zero. His words of wisdom travelled to the spaces of air and the crevices of ears, and the aimless mannequins animated. Faces alight with new truth and insight. Love is zero and infinite. Atop the common denominator we stand, and to the half-life of love we die. 3 upturned V07 until we die.
Kind of running off time, we have 6 more people, so if you're going to be very, very short, we might be able to fit you in. Sandy Knott is next.
Thanks, Sue. I came across a new radio station here a couple weeks ago called Soho Radio. It's based in London, obviously. And this guy, Chris Redmond, has a show once a month on a Friday called The Dojo. It's worth checking out. This is one of his pieces. It's written about a geek, a room after a geek. Stickers and mic stands, boxes of flyers, needles on records, tangles of wires, speakers to the ceiling, lights down low, poems and songs crackle in unstemmable flow. This is what I know. I feel at home here, comfy chairs and sofas that smell of old beer, sitting in the corner listening to the night. Sounds on the stage make me grab a pen and write, take flight on sonic thermals, wind under my wings. I love the people who love listening to things. People who sing, people who speak, people who play just to get through the week. I seek them and I seek these places. Even when they're empty, you can still hear traces of tunes that were played the night before. Fragments of sounds litter the floor. They inhabit cigarette butts and discarded flyers. Each one holds a secret of last night's desires. Like smouldering flames, if you fan the flames, you find a thousand songs with a thousand names.
Thank you, Sandy. And next we have Richard Clare, I think.
I just have three very short limericks, so I'll just read them. And there was a poor farmer called Ed, whose wife he kept in the shed. She was driving him mental, but he was quite sentimental. So he killed her, but held on to the head. There was a woodcutter called Reese, who liked to have sex with the trees. One day he had an erection, but forgot his protection, and contracted Dutch elm disease. And this one's a bit darker. It's about Ted Gundy, the serial killer. There was a young buck called Ted who fancied himself a co-ed. So he got into his beetle and made himself lethal and wouldn't stop until they were all dead. Thank you.
Okay, that was interesting. Next we have Mona Gillen.
So, this is the Cork take on Humpty Dumpty. Humpty Dumpty sat in the wall. Humpty Dumpty had a great fall. He didn't smash or break at all. He bounced straight back upon the wall. There was a trampling on the ground, and Humpty Dumpty safe and sound. But good news is no news, so the star, the sun, and the mirror of the time paid Humpty Dumpty off to pretend that he was dead. He had to live in seclusion for the rest of his life, couldn't spend a penny of it, so the moral of the story is, honesty is the best policy.
Sound advice, girl. Sharon O'Neill, our winner tonight for the 5-word challenge.
Didn't know my name was on the list. This was written back in the dark days when I didn't have money for therapy. So there's no unicorns in this one. It's called She Breathes. She breathes slowly, deeply. She tries to find her center while the tempest rages around her. She goes deep inside and hides, just for a second. She breathes slowly, deeply. She seeks refuge from the storm of emotions, his, theirs, hers. She holds back the chaos just for a second. She breathes slowly, deeply. She reconnects with all that matters, all that's true, all she's fought for. She celebrates that she survived just for a second. She breathes slowly, deeply. She gathers her strength, she gets it together, and she stands tall. She's ready to become present in just a second. She breathes slowly, deeply. Time to step up, to be their anchor, their safe harbor, their true north.
They meet her again. Just for a second. She breathes. Slowly. Deeply. She's ready. She's there. They'll be safe now. It'll be okay. She breathes.
Yeah, just checking the time. Maybe two very short ones from our last two contributors. Maybe I'll call Thomas Carr first. He has a short one.
Yep.
Yeah, very short one. And then we'll have Christy Parker to end the night.
So peer pressure is great. I was planning on reading, so I hope it's okay. Doesn't have a title. Rain falls, men parted station. Beers for help, ashtrays on wall. Broken mannequin, wrong crutch. Can't open my eyes, they're chattering, ticking.
Thank you, Thomas. That was your first time tonight as well, wasn't it?
Yep.
Well done. Come again. Thank you. Chris Parker.
I wasn't expecting to read anything tonight, but just as well I did read it because I've got a poem here. It's quite short, but it's got two introductions. The first introduction is that it's a poem that's seasonal, but it's kind of out of season. And secondly, it's kind of visual as well. So it's audio and visual. We got that concept. Second introduction is, I know it's only August, but I've got snowballs. Which is all related to the visuality of the poem. So I would ask him to open the snowball. It's better to comprehend the poem that you're about to hear. As I said, it's audio and it's visual. And the visual part is contained within the unseasonal snowball. It took me 20 minutes to write that out and scrub off the book. And the poem is called, I read this once a year and I have to read it tonight, otherwise I'll have to write it again tomorrow because you'll be out of jail for reasons which will now become apparent. It's called Counting. Only 129 days to Christmas Day. Did you know that? The geese are getting fat and the turkeys are getting nervous. You can't avoid it, now stay impervious. Baby Jesus, holly, candles, Santa, empty sack, jingle jangling ever closer like a train upon a track. Three wise men with pie shop shares dancing in the snow, continuing their goal, 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 singing Made in China. Ho, ho, ho! Only 19 weeks to Christmas. Are you putting money to one side to celebrate the birth of Christ the Saviour and the long hungover ride? Christmas falls on a Thursday this year, although many people will fall every day. Into gutter, song, pub, arms, hope, bait, company, fight, joy, chaos, tears, love, and disarray. There's just over 4 months left to Christmas, so don't take any chances. Borrow too much earlier this year and wrap up those finances. It's gathering as we speak, like a storm, never stopping. Leave the beach, do your Christmas shopping. Parcel your wishes early and you will find that peace on earth is peace of mind. Just 2,896 hours to Christmas. Don't blame me. I'm only a tree.